Brian Had a Dream. 10,000 movies, 40 years. This is his journey, and this is your invitation to join along. This is the quest for 10,000.
Hello once again, I'm Ben.
And I'm Brian.
And you are listening to the quest for 10,000. Thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode once again. You can find us on Twitter at 10K, T-E-N-K Movies, or at Brian's blog, 10kmovies.com. That's T-E-N-K Movies.com. We're so glad that you joined us and hope you might also be sharing this conversation about Brian's quest to watch 10,000 movies before he turns 40 with a friend. Brian, it is good to see you today. We are recording right before Independence Day, and so there's been an Independence Day in the movies, a resurgence of Independence Days, and by all reviews, it is a pretty bad movie. And so that's produced our topic for this episode, which is movies that don't perform well, the proverbial flops. We're going to talk some about what a flop is, the ingredients that make up a flop, and why it seems that so many of these blockbuster pictures in recent months have not lived up to their expectations. Our top five is going to simply be top five films that first come to mind when we think of a flop. But before then, as always, we start with, where are you in the quest, Brian? What number movie?
6,869.
And what is the last movie you saw?
This, earlier today, I finished a movie from 1963, an Elvis film called It Happened at the World's Fair.
An Elvis film?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For some reason, that just makes sense. So close to the 4th of July.
Yeah.
Kind of a
yeah.
beach bingo yeah. kind of yeah. rock
it's,
out.
It's hot. Sort of thing. It's summer outside. Elvis.
tell our listeners what that movie is about and what
Elvis
you thought
is
of
a crop duster who is down on his luck, and for reasons never really explained per se, he winds up in Seattle at the time of the World's Fair. Filmed on location at the World's Fair, apparently. Of course, Elvis, being an Elvis film, he has his usual romance. And his friend, who's his fellow crop duster, somehow they get mixed up with this girl who's looking for her uncle, and they wind up semi-adopting her. And then the girl that Elvis is in love with, who is kind of brushing him off, it's just a weird triangle. But they wind up adopting this girl after the Department of Health and Human Services take the child away briefly. Then Elvis has to go and rescue her from the big bad government. And it was okay.
just okay.
The Space Needle made an appearance.
So somewhere, I mean, you've seen 6,000 movies. So this is somewhere in the 3,000
yeah,
range.
Yeah, it's gonna be. It's probably gonna
in
be
in terms
yeah, three
of ranking.
Stars, yeah, it's as far as Elvis films go, it's not the worst.
What is the worst Elvis
film? I have a limited group. Kissing Cousins was not good. Where Elvis plays.
That's just a poor title.
Well,
also.
Elvis plays like two versions of himself: one with blonde hair,
oh,
one with
right.
black hair.
Cousins, identical
yeah.
cousins.
It was yeah. Interesting. Now, I tell you, Jailhouse Rock is good. I don't know that it. I feel safe in saying it went downhill from there.
Yeah, that's probably an accurate statement. Sorry to any Elvis fans out there, but his films not necessarily.
Yeah, he wanted
his
to be
best
like
work.
A Frank Sinatra crossover and be respected as an actor, and it just didn't get there. And part of that is he never really. I've not seen a film yet where he didn't like just break out into song 4 or 5 times. This movie, the tagline for this movie bills it as Elvis goes to Seattle and finds 10 reasons to sing.
So what you're saying is probably Elvis and what the studio thought was a hit, but at the very least, this probably may have made its money back, but it maybe wasn't exactly.
I'm sure it made money.
The
I
best.
Mean, no, I don't know that Elvis was ever box office gold, although he was certainly profitable.
Well, there you go. So that is what a wonderful segue into talking about some movies that maybe they make some money but not quite enough, or maybe they're successful in one ways but are flops in others. This summer, there's all kinds of movies that have come out recently. Independence Day Resurgence, which we mentioned at the top of the show. World of Warcraft is another. Yeah. Angry Birds. And most recently, the BFG, the Big Friendly Giant. All movies that studios were sure were going to be certified hits.
Mm-hmm.
And, Brian, how many of those exactly hit anywhere close to what studios were expecting?
Well, I've heard good things about Angry Birds, and I think it's made over $200 million. All these movies will probably make over $200 million at the box office, and this is worldwide, of course. Now, will that be, at the end of the day, profitable for the films? A couple of them is going to be close. And that's a sad state of affairs when you say you just made $200 million and you didn't turn a profit. That's sad.
It is sad. And it's interesting just to me. It seems like maybe it's always been this way, that there are a number of either commercial or financial flops.
Mm-hmm.
Films that are disappointments on one level or another. Maybe it's always been that way. There's always been movies that
yes.
have underperformed. But
yes.
it just seems to me that recently there's a lot more of those. There's something about the way that the movie industry is now that is very high reward, but
yeah.
also high risk, and very hit or very, very miss.
Well, I'd say part of that is sheer number of competitors. If you look at the number of films released every year, you look at the number of films that are coming out every year, you can go back, 20 years ago, it was probably a third or less. There's a lot more studios involved, big budget studios involved, and I think that just crowds out the potential to make a profit.
Well, and not only competitors in actual theaters, but also competition just in terms of the way we consume media, right?
Sure, sure. I mean, the quality of programming on Netflix and other things. And one thing that Netflix has, it is a different kind of competitor. Television programs, people can record or whatever, but those don't come out. But Netflix is such an on-demand type service to where it may crowd out the front. Because typically, television studios or television networks are moving their shows away from their hit shows away from Friday night because they don't want to compete with somebody who's going out. Netflix doesn't care when they compete with you. I mean, it's just whenever you want to watch the program.
Not only Netflix, but just the proliferation. That word of any sort of streaming service, be it
uh-huh.
Netflix,
Amazon
Hulu,
Prime, Crackle,
even YouTube.
Yeah.
You can watch and consume media in so many different ways. So that definitely
yeah.
is probably a factor in there not maybe being as many.
We have a lot more
surefire hits.
And a lot of times the programs on Netflix or on Hulu or whatever, we treat them as if they are a 10-hour movie.
Right.
As opposed to, distinct episodes of a program that you watch from here to here to here. We're burning through them in a weekend. We're going through 10 episodes. That's just the way everybody's watching,
The whole binge watch.
Well, because part of that is the notion that, when a show used to come out on a Thursday night, everybody gathered that Friday night and work. Well, now when a show comes out at midnight on a Friday, by Monday, everybody's talking. You want to be a part of that conversation. So you got to watch it, and you got to do it. You got to consume it so that you don't miss out on that conversation.
Well, so one ingredient maybe why we're seeing so many misses with films is just the abundance of options that we have, and films maybe not. People say, "Well, I'll just catch it later when it comes at a cheaper price on
Netflix,
some sort of service
Redbox,
I'm already paying for."
Yes.
Or something that I may not have to pay anything for. I can watch it in the comfort of my home with my own stereo surround and big screen, high definition TV and that sort of thing. So that's one of the reasons there may be more flops.
Yeah.
But it seems like there's probably also some other factors. So besides the number of options, what might be some other things that are ingredients to why so many of these big expected blockbusters
mm-hmm.
are just collapsing under
their
own weight?
Sometimes I think it's just a misreading of where the public is in their desire to see. Like, you look at assuming it is a flop, I mean, its first weekend is a flop. Well, almost every weekend now is judged live or die on its first weekend. Every film is.
Okay, well, let's think about that for a second. So how does that
contribute? A lot of pressure.
To the flop.
Okay. It's a lot of pressure, and what it means is that, like, if you underperform in that first 48 hours, the media, there's a narrative written about your film now, and now all of a sudden your film has this stench that you can't avoid of, like, it's not good. It's not good. And that snowballs. And buzz is a very carefully, it's very difficult. Once you have really horrible buzz, you can tell from a mile away that a movie, like the new Ghostbusters movie, you and I can tell, it's going to struggle. Because, and it may catch on or whatever, but it's trying to overcome a ton of negative publicity.
Yeah,
I don't know that it can.
This
is like 3 months out from the movie's release.
It might be a good movie.
But it's going to be
but
hard
if it
to overcome
if it's
that.
Not just a grand slam from the opening scene, it's really going to be different.
I mean, when you have people who have never seen your film, but they're already like rolling their eyes at your film, you're in trouble.
Right.
Same thing sort of happened to Batman versus Superman. You could see it coming a mile away that there's problems.
So a little bit of that is the dynamic, the mechanism now for criticism, for review. Again, the abundance of social media. Everybody has a podcast or a blog or something like that to review something. It's really interesting, though, what you said made me think of another phenomenon in TV that's similar that people have been talking about for years, and maybe there's a little bit of a trickle down effect. Is that, you know, back in the day when we were growing up, 70s, 80s, 90s, shows on network TV had time to find their audience.
Yeah,
they were given time to find their audience because, again, there weren't as many channels, there weren't as many options, and now if a show doesn't kind of pop a certain rating. That most shows are never going to pop because of the abundance of other options. It's going to get canceled. It may only have two or three episodes. It may only have a half a season. They may pay for a full season, but they just burn the last half of the season because they've already decided they're not going to renew it. And so that seems to me to be a similar dynamic in some of what you're talking about in terms of that opening weekend, is that movies aren't maybe allowed as much to grab an audience or develop on its own.
Sleeper hits don't happen anymore.
These event movies, maybe inherently, because they're supposed to be event movies, and they're built up so much so that when they don't reach there, it hurts them.
I mean, you talk about fatigue. When there is an event movie every other weekend in a year, 26 event movies is a lot of events.
Right.
And it's very difficult to continue to have that sort of enthusiasm that you had in week one, in week 26.
Yeah.
So I think most people, they look at the calendar and they circle maybe four movies in the course of a year that they know, hey, I'm really excited about. Now, one of those started taking up with Star Wars. So you've only got three that are left that are really going to be able to match that level of enthusiasm.
Right. So we have audience fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
We have some of just the critical feedback loop that a movie's dead in the water if it doesn't do something.
And people are looking for things to like pick, you know, that it's a lot easier to sell a story or to tell a story or to get hits on a story where you're talking about backstage drama sinking a film than it is, oh, this set was great.
And we have the number of options. But one thing we haven't mentioned yet would also probably be that, honestly, some of these movies are just,
they're not good.
Bad.
They're not good.
And there's maybe many reasons why they're bad. Have you seen Independence Day Resurgence?
No.
I haven't either. Because I just had no interest to. It's a little bit of that audience fatigue thing.
Yeah.
But one thing that I've heard about it or read about it is that it's just kind of a convoluted mess.
Sure.
It's a sequel, so it suffers from some of the challenges you always have with a sequel, trying to top the last movie. But you add in also, and maybe this gets back to your audience expectations, more into that realm, Independence Day came out in 1996.
20 years later. It's a little bit past its prime.
Right. And you said something similar about Zoolander 2. You thought Zoolander 2, when we did our summer movie
preview,
would
be a huge hit.
You thought it was going to be a huge hit.
I did.
And it was
that.
Not.
I did think
and,
that.
And why do you think it didn't
well,
work?
Well, I will say part of the reason I thought that was because I have a friend who loves Zoolander so much, and she colored my vision of what Zoolander would be. I thought it had other fans like her. She was the anomaly. and I
thought she was the exception,
yeah,
not the rule.
I was confused, but I'm not sure Ben Stiller is that big a name for one. You know, I just don't. It wasn't good enough, and it didn't catch the wave early enough. And it may be, she says it, she's seen it, I have not. She says it's a very, very funny movie, and it may be that it suffers the same fate Zoolander did, which was it finds its home and quotable, and people love it and everything, but just not in theaters. And that happens to a lot of films.
Right.
The thing with Independence Day, okay, I don't know who, what person thought that Jeff Goldblum was selling theaters. He's not. Will Smith is not, really. But he would have come closer than Jeff Goldblum. Once you don't have Will Smith involved, I think everybody's desire to see Independence Day 2 falls.
And apparently, spoilers, just from what I've seen, reviews, synopsis,
the president
I've
gives
read
almost the same
online,
speech he gave in the first movie.
Is, but also, like, at the end of the movie, again, spoiler alert, Data from Star Trek is, like, the hero badass at the end.
Oh.
Yeah, he was in the first one. He was the doctor that went all
yeah,
crazy and got possessed.
Yeah.
And apparently he wakes up from a coma and is part of the
okay
key to defeating them.
Okay, good. Good for Data.
Later on. But
good for
so,
Data.
Again, maybe not actors that could carry the full weight of expectations.
The fact that you can't say his name and expect people to know who that is. You have to say Data from Star Trek. So,
right, there you go. Brent Spiner, everybody.
Yeah, nobody else.
I wonder, too, in terms of audience expectations or misreading of an audience by a studio, how much do you think it is also this very cliched thing that we hear a lot also when you might be online, that Hollywood's just lost its originality?
That's,
how much do you think that contributes to
true,
it?
That's true, but I don't know that that is any different now than what... I mean, there are still original films being made. I just read something where Pixar said they're out of the sequel business for a while now, because I think they have like four or five sequels in a row coming out.
After Incredibles
which,
2.
Cars 3, people. Cars 3. We did not need a second Cars. We don't definitely don't need a third one. But Toy Story 4 and all that. But they said, you know, but that's just the quirk of the way it worked for them. Because the guy said, we do sequels when the person that made the original has a story and wants to go for it. But that's neither here nor there. But... I do think there is a certain extent to where Hollywood is, the studios are about making a profit, and it's a lot easier to bankroll $200 million on an idea that you know made money in the past than it is to throw $200 million at an idea that you don't know people want to see. You know, like, because if you, when you do, you wind up something like Pacific Rim, which didn't really light it up. There will be a sequel. But it didn't really light it up like you would have thought, and so you want to rein it in. So you're always looking, like part of the reason why World of Warcraft came out is because you want to tap into an audience that's already built in. I mean, that's very from just a financial standpoint, that's very appealing. If you already have a built-in fan base, the hope is they'll get excited and come turn out and see your film, and then you have a threshold of money to come in. So it's very difficult.
Well, you're hitting actually on two other things that we haven't mentioned yet, so let me name those, I think, which is there's something different when we're talking about flops, like Independence Day, Resurgence, feels like a flop.
Yeah, it feels like a flop.
World of Warcraft might kind of end up being...
But World of Warcraft is a different
flop.
You're judging it differently because it's a video game movie.
That's
so
true.
It doesn't quite have...
Flop-ish, but maybe more of a disappointment. So maybe we'll talk about the discussion maybe in more purely economic terms. Is the line between a movie that might be a critical or box office disappointment as opposed to a flop really just one of economics? It's just one that it just does not
sometimes
reach the audience and does not make the money that studio expected it to.
Well, now, there's a bit of a new wrinkle now, especially when you talk about DC Universe, Marvel Universe, Star Wars Universe. You have film studios that they are not just planning a sequel. They have 6, 7, 8 movies coming out based on this movie.
They're trying to build a franchise.
So if this movie isn't successful, you got 6, 7 other movies in various stages of development that are impacted by what... So that's a big... That's a much bigger, like... But one thing I want to say that we haven't brought up is the fine line between between giving fans what they want
right
and fan service, where it gets, you've got to do it to a certain extent, But everybody gets derided. I mean, anytime you read any internet article and the words fan service are in it, it almost invariably is some sort of derision or some sort of like, ha ha ha, or your movie sucks, or my goodness. So there's a fine line, though, between giving people what they want and being completely original. Because if you take characters that people have expectations for and you go off the rail, like Superman kills Zod, oh my gosh, you can't do that to Superman because he wouldn't do that. But you want us to be original. So you can't, you know, it's very difficult to thread that needle and right. give people what they want and expect, but also give them something that they didn't expect at the same time. And you're putting people in an almost impossible conundrum.
Right. So I'll come back one more time, though, as we think about this, especially as we're going to go into the top five
mm-hmm.
and think about just kind of the movies that seem to come to our mind for flops. What to you, though, is the economic threshold? What is the difference between something, again, like Superman versus mm-hmm. Batman that is disappointing in some ways, but still is going to make more than its budget when you factor in worldwide box office, and something, you know, like Independence Day Resurgence that's just, it's a turd and won't make anything
yeah.
back whatsoever.
Yeah. It's hard to say. I mean, certainly a film that each studio is probably counting on about four or five films being their meal ticket for the year. If one of those turns on it, then they're in trouble, you know. And you look, even though they made moderately successful money, you look at movies like Amazing Spider-Man and Amazing Spider-Man 2. I wouldn't necessarily call those flops, but they were big enough disappointments that they changed the whole trajectory.
Right.
of what Sony was going to do with their properties.
So it has to be something that hits some sort of Venn diagram of expected to perform really well
mm-hmm.
Financially and did not, expected to have some sort of critical acclaim
mm-hmm.
and did not, and then basically also probably just did not execute any kind of coherent story idea
to really
garner any kind of sustained memorability, I would
sure.
say.
And you can argue, I guess you can say if a movie comes out and audiences don't find it, but critics love it, you'd be hard-pressed to call that a disaster. You
right.
just say maybe it was ahead of its time or whatever, but you could come up with a reason. But when it hits the double whammy of nobody went to see it and the people that did hated it, then you really have a hard time spinning that as anything but disaster.
And the only thing that's memorable is that it was bad, but not so bad that everybody was like, oh, this is so bad, it's good.
Yeah, well, you
and
can
kitschy,
watch it
and
ironically
sort of
or whatever.
Right,
but.
Okay. Well, with those kind of ingredients and thoughts in mind, we're going to move on to our top five. Top five movies that kind of first came to Brian's mind.
Well,
when thought about a flop,
too.
And I may chime in with a couple extra ones
okay.
after Brian's five. So, what for you? These are are they in a particular order for
no,
you?
No, I don't think so. These are just the movies I think of. I mean, I'll say the last two for movies I think are pretty much definitive flops. Some of this is, we were talking about this earlier, and some of these were movies that you said that I thought, yeah, he's right. Like Superman 4. Okay, it killed the Superman franchise for a decade and a half.
Right.
You know, they didn't even attempt to make another film till Superman Returns, which was, you know, this movie
also a flop.
Sure, but it was not. It was better than Superman 4.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and there's a number of reasons. This was an ego problem, but this one just got out of hand. I would argue that the problems were there in Superman 3.
Yeah.
Okay, the problems were definitely there, but Superman 4 just took those problems and took out any redeeming quality. I'd say another one, not as many people will see it, but I see Batman and Robin as a huge flop.
Yes.
Batman
true.
Forever, again, same issue. Batman Forever, the problems are there. I mean, that movie's a mess. But Batman and Robin is a horrible, painful, like, there's just nothing that you want to, like, the only lines that are memorable for how bad and just completely cheesy
right.
they are.
Right.
So it's definitely on the flop scale. Well, you say flop and everybody thinks immediately Waterworld was a huge flop. I mean, and that's just because you had a guy who was riding a crest and you just gave him some money to make his own thing, and it was just It has moments, but it's not a good movie.
No, it's not a good movie, and it lost
a ton of money.
Well,
then
he
went back and followed it up with The Postman, which is Waterworld on land. In the Western Waterworld. So, Kevin Costner was not the person you wanted running a studio,
okay, so,
that's for sure.
So right now you're five. You mentioned Superman 4, Batman and Robin, Waterworld, the little sub-tweet of The Postman.
The other two, these are the definitive flops. Heaven's Gate from the 70s. It's the guy, and rest in peace, Michael Cimino just died either yesterday or earlier this morning. And right after The Deer Hunter, it was critically acclaimed, everybody loved, he was one of those up-and-coming auteur directors in the 70s, they gave him carte blanche to make a film. The movie wound up taking down the old United Artists studio. Nobody went and saw it, it was just a horrible, it's bloated, a horrible shoot, and that's another thing that you typically, when a movie flops, within 2 or 3 months, definitely within a year of its release, you'll hear all these stories about how the filming was just a nightmare, and you could see it, like Fantastic Four, which we didn't mention.
Right.
But Fantastic Four, the director's like MIA, and they've shut him up in a hidden closet right. for a while. Like, you can't come out.
The press tour's not
yeah.
going
like,
very
just,
well.
Red flag.
Right.
So usually that kind of stuff happens. The guy didn't know what he was doing. It got out of hand. Sometimes that happens, and the movie winds up being successful, like Apocalypse Now or whatever. But most of the time, very problematic shoots lead to very problematic films.
Right. And we hope, probably, Star Wars Rogue One is not that. That's gotten a little buzz
We'll come back to that.
What's the other definitive
flop? The other one, the
flop?
Definitive flop, Ishtar. Okay, when you hear the word Ishtar, you think of flop. It single-handedly kept Elaine May, who should have been a pretty big name. Her and Mike Nichols were a pretty famous comedy team in the 60s, and she was on track to be the first breakthrough female director and have a pretty substantial career, and she was never allowed to direct another film after this. I mean, it was bad. It had Warren Beatty and Dustin Hoffman in it, and it just fell apart.
Yeah. The only other ones I would mention, I would add maybe as honorable mentions, I think, would be, we kind of alluded to it earlier, any video game movie, whatsoever.
It's hard to make a good video game movie.
It's just hard to do. And then, just because it's what I first think of because of the, to me, classic line, there's more money in a flop, is The Producers.
Yeah.
And ironically, the first Producers well-received, critically acclaimed movie, but there was a remake also
that did very poorly. Was based on the Tony Award-winning musical.
But it was not a good movie.
No, it was not.
No. Well, listeners, you tell us, what do you think are the ingredients for a flop? What other flops did we miss in our discussion? And what of these movies would you maybe characterize more as a cult classic now than a flop? Do that by dropping us a line on Twitter, @10kmovies, or going to Brian's blog, 10kmovies.com. Brian, along his quest, has watched many flops, maybe some of them so you don't have to. Until next time, we hope that your week is a 10.
10 plus.
Borderline 11. Have a good one.